This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the Paris leadership plans to engage with the West African bloc, ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations to have Jammeh return home.
That's Pandera Mbai reporting from the Gambia. Details next.
Also, the U.S. military says it carried out 6 airstrikes in south-central Somalia, killing 62 militants. And Nigeria's army today calls for the closure of Amnesty International offices in the country.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
In the Gambia, the former ruling Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction Party has elected former President Yahya Jammeh as the party's supreme leader. Jammeh will also run on an APRC ticket in the Gambia's 2021 elections. The decision came during the party's Congress over the weekend. Jammeh is living in exile in Equatorial Guinea, Pandera Mbai reports.
Despite the alleged crimes associated with him and his government, Yahya Jammeh APRC National Congress delegates have decided that Jammeh will not only serve as the party's flag bearer, but they also will facilitate his return to the country. The party's leadership plans to engage with the West African bloc, ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations to have Jammeh return home. Usman Jatta is an official of the APRC. He spoke at the party congress in Buyam on the West Coast region of the Gambia over the weekend.
Our party founding father and leader, His Excellency, Sir Professor Alhaji Dr. Yahya Jammeh Babilimansa, is today not here with us in person but in spirit. It's special because despite he's been absent as the party leader, we are able to steer the affairs of our noble party and uphold the principles of unity.
The former ruling party also said it wants ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations to prevent the Gambian government from selling any more of Jammeh's properties. It also says it will begin legal action against the Barrow government to recover Jammeh's properties that have been sold illegally. Pasamba Jau is a member of a pro-democracy group, the Democratic Union of Gambian Activists, DUGA. He says the APRC's move to elect Jammeh as its leader shows the party's lack of empathy for his victims.
It's really the height of insensitivity, given everything that Jammeh had done to our people. But it also speaks to a greater problem, that is this government, Adama Barrow's government's lack of urgency in dealing with the victims. Because it is definitely sad that in this day and age, after everything that we know that Jammeh did, this government is here hobnobbing with Jammeh's associates. Of course, they are now comfortable to believe that Jammeh is innocent.
Joe thinks Jammeh's return to the Gambia could be a recipe for instability.
If anybody believes that Jammeh would come back to the Gambia and live a normal life, that person is really high on very bad drugs, because Gambians would not sit around and allow a monster like Yahya Jammeh to come back to that country and live a normal life. Those days are over. This man had done more harm to Gambians than anybody who had ever ruled that country. And we are not going to sit and act like that has not happened.
There is a law passed by Jammeh's government that bars Gambians living in the diaspora from occupying an official position in any political party. Jau says that law bans Jammeh from heading the APRC.
The provision of that act is still not amended, is that anybody who lives in the diaspora, you cannot be an executive member of a political party if you live in the diaspora. So that appointment is illegal, is null and void, and it's insulting to the victims of Yahya Jammeh.
The APRC leadership also wants the government to withdraw soldiers stationed at Jammeh's family residence in Kanilai, and they want the freeze on party bank accounts and vehicles lifted. Jammeh ruled the country from 1994 to 2017. He was forced to leave the country after he lost the 2016 election, but refused to surrender his office. International and Gambian rights groups accused Jammeh of committing numerous human rights abuses and massive corruption during his years in office. The United States government recently barred Jammeh and his family from entering the country because he is believed to have committed serious acts of corruption or gross violation of human rights. For VOA Africa, this is Panderimbai reporting.
Uganda opens its national dialogue tomorrow, a meeting of religious, civic, government, and political leaders to build a national consensus for developing peace, democracy, and equal opportunity. The conference is driven largely by religious leaders. Some participants, however, hope it leads to a path for President Yoweri Museveni's eventual retirement. Museveni has led the country for 32 years and shows no sign of leaving office. While he wants support for stabilizing the country and boosting the economy, his critics say he has become increasingly harsh towards any opposition. Many young voters say his government ignores their concerns. On Saturday, security forces forced one political opponent, legislator Robert Chagulani, to flee his hotel after police banned him from performing at a concert. Chagulani also goes by the name of Bobby Wine and is an internationally known pop singer. Earlier this year, Wine and other members of parliament were arrested while campaigning and were allegedly beaten badly while in custody.
Rwandan security forces have yet to identify the attackers who set fire to three cars in Nyungwe National Park Saturday, killing two people and injuring eight. Eugene Uwiwana reports from Kigali.
The Rwanda Defense Force says the military is pursuing the attackers in the Nyungwe forest. The military says it has a good idea of who is behind the attack in the southern region. There have been several attacks on civilians in the southern province this year, and President Paul Kagame named Emmanuel Gasana, the former police inspector general of police, to be the governor of South. In January and August this year, gunmen attacked the Nyaruguru district and killed two persons and injured many. The government says the assailants come from neighboring Burundi. This resident of the area describes some of the assailants at previous attacks. She says they had guns and knives, and some wore black clothes. Although they killed some people, she says her mother only got a chest injury. The defense spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Innocent Munyengango, told VOA the army is ready to handle these attacks and ease security frustrations among Rwandans who live near the Burundi border. Munyengango says, "What is happening are normal problems. We are following them closely to figure out where the attackers are coming from, and we promise Rwandans that we identify them and we capture any group that can be behind those attacks." While speaking to journalists on the sidelines of the National Council on Friday, President Paul Kagame seemed to blame Burundi for the attacks along the border. He said his government will not respond to provocations. Tensions between the two countries have been risen this year. Earlier this month, Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza unsuccessfully sought an emergency meeting on the East African Community because of what he called Rwandan aggression. Rwanda has denied those allegations. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
The U.S. military says it carried out six airstrikes in south-central Somalia, killing 62 militants to prevent the coastal area from being used as a safe haven. The U.S. Africa Command says the Al-Shabaab group has used the area to plot and direct terror attacks, steal humanitarian aid, extort the populace to fund its operations, and shelter radical terrorists. Four airstrikes were launched Saturday in the Gandarisha area, south of the capital Mogadishu, killing 34 militants. Two attacks yesterday in the area killed an additional 28 militants. There were no reports of civilian casualties. Under President Donald Trump, the U.S. has increasingly provided support to Somalia's UN-backed government. It has carried out at least 46 airstrikes so far this year, and the weekend attacks were among the biggest.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In the Gambia, former President Yahya Jammeh, who is in exile, has been elected as his party's supreme leader. Rwandan security forces are trying to identify attackers who killed 2 and injured 8. And the U.S. military says it carried out 6 airstrikes in south-central Somalia, killing 62 militants. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A little over a year ago, the military ousted Zimbabwe's longtime leader, Robert Mugabe. Emmerson Mnangagwa, who for decades was Mugabe's right-hand man, replaced him, and he pledged a new era of media openness. Reporter Kudzai Zvinavashi takes a look at just how well that pledge has held up this year.
Nigel Nyamutumbu is the program manager of the Media Alliance of Zimbabwe, a media organization. He says the year started on a good note.
I would say the year began with a lot of promise for media development in Zimbabwe, and not only media development in so far as the media environment was concerned, but also in so far as the commitment by the then new administration, which had come on board in November of 2017, that they were going to be reviewing all restrictive media laws.
Kudahove is the legal officer for Media Institute of Southern Africa. He echoes Nyamutumbu's assessment of the start of the year, but he notes the last half of the year told a different story.
After the election period, the actual polling date, that's when we saw a spike, starting with the harassment of journalists around the marches for election results on August 1. To date, we've recorded about 34 cases of journalists getting violated.
Hove says the bulk of the cases were recorded after the July 31st election. He thinks most violations were politically motivated. Hove says 32 cases targeted individuals and 2 targeted media houses. During Mugabe's 37 years of leadership, the government increasingly tightened control over the media with a series of restrictive laws. Nyamutumbu says the government ought to pass media reform laws heading into 2019.
There is a real need coming into 2019 for the government to begin to walk the talk. You cannot be open for business when your media is closed. You cannot talk of re-engagement with the global community when you are not re-engaged with your own citizens.
Part of the proposed reforms is that government has to grant licenses to independent television and radio stations. The proposals also would get rid of laws that have allowed the government to arrest journalists. Nyamutumbu says that reforming the media restrictions is one of the low-hanging fruits this government should be reaching for. As the year comes to an end, the government recently started consulting stakeholders how best they can reform the media space. But Nyamutumbu says Zimbabwe has to get past consulting and begin implementing reforms. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashi from Harare.
Nigeria's army today called for the closure of Amnesty International's offices in the country after the human rights organization issued a report blaming the government for failing to halt the violence between herders and farmers. The army says Amnesty is trying to destabilize the country and says it fabricated allegations of human rights abuses by soldiers. Army commanders allege the group supports dissident groups and has deviated from its international parent organizations, core values. Amnesty's new report says more than 3,600 people have died in clashes between farmers and herders in Nigeria since 2016. It said fighting over grazing land and water is increasing because of the rising population and a long drought. The report said the government has failed to investigate the attacks and bring those responsible to justice. It also said security forces had been close enough to stop some attacks but failed to act. The army denies those allegations.
A recent United Nations report says Nigeria ranks 11th among the 20 countries in the world with high prevalence of child marriage. Many Nigerians are not happy with the report because of health and social implications for child brides. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
Tina Savage is a marriage counselor in Lagos and member of the non-profit group Save the Girl Child from Abuse. The organization saves underage girls from sex abuse, early marriage, and street hawking.
Child marriage is not good because it has a lot of risk. One of it is that it has a medical side effect on that child, because normally when it gets to a stage, there's a disease that normally come up because they start sex earlier. So that by the time they are like 18, they cannot sit down. When they see that their private part is wet and all that. So it's very, very risky. Then secondly, another one is that a child that will start giving birth early definitely will not go to school. It will affect such child's career.
The United Nations Entity for Gender Equality and the Empowerment of Women recently said that Niger has the highest rate of child marriage, with 76% of girls married before they are 18. Nigeria ranks 11th in the latest figures. The UN says worldwide, more than 700 million women alive today were married as children. 17% or 125 million of them live in Africa. The UN report says girls married young are deprived of education and stand a greater risk of contracting sexually transmitted diseases. They usually aren't able to contribute economically as much to their families and communities as girls who marry later. Dr. Augustine Agogwa is a lecturer in the Department of Sociology at the University of Lagos. He says the UN report on Nigeria is not unexpected. It shows lack of interest to address issues that affect individual rights.
In this case also, I don't see anything unusual about it, because to a reasonable extent, it depicts our low level of development. It depicts the low attention given to issues about our gender equity. It also shows terrible state of lack of political will to address issues that borders on protection of civic and civil rights of individuals.
Agogwa says the various tiers of government in Nigeria are not doing enough to stop child marriage. Aisha Abubakar, the Nigerian Minister for Women Affairs and Social Development, says the plight of young girls confronted with cultural practice of early marriage is call for concern. She says an estimated 6 million girls were married by age 15 and 36 million girls by age 18 nationwide. The minister says child marriage is more prevalent in the northeast and northwest of the country. In 2016, the government launched a national strategy to end child marriage, aiming to reduce it by 40% by 2020 and to end the practice by 2030. The program includes educating parents and guardians to delay letting daughters until they are 18. It says that educating the girl child is an advantage to the country. It is funded by the federal government and is under the Ministry of Women Affairs and Social Development. The Child Rights Act, passed into law in 2003, sets the age of marriage at 18 years old. However, only 23 of the 36 states have begun to implement the minimum age of marriage. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
Shark numbers alongside the Queensland state coast have declined by more than 90% for some species in the past 5 decades, according to new research that calls for better protection for threatened species in Australian waters. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia has 170 types of sharks out of approximately 440 species globally. Great white and grey nurse sharks already are listed as threatened in Australian waters. Researchers from the University of Queensland and Griffith University have analysed data from shark control programs to gauge changes in populations over the past five decades. Nets and baited hooks have been used in Queensland to reduce the risk of attacks on swimmers and surfers. The research teams looked at the number of white, tiger, hammerhead and whaler sharks caught between the early 1960s to 2016. What they found was a shock, according to George Roth from the University of Queensland, who was one of the authors of the study.
The results are quite striking. So what we found over the last 50 years is a dramatic decline in the numbers of apex sharks on the Queensland coastline. So the number of large sharks on our beaches have declined by between 74 and 92%. At the same time, the size of the sharks are also getting smaller. So there are fewer and smaller sharks on Queensland beaches than there were 50 years ago. And this includes the globally endangered hammerhead sharks that have declined by up to 92%. And importantly, white sharks that are listed as vulnerable in Australia have shown no sign of recovery, despite protections that have been put in place over two decades ago to stop fishing.
Researchers are blaming overfishing for a sharp fall in hammerhead and great white shark populations. They say that the apparent collapse of certain shark species would indicate that the overall health of the oceans is also in decline. They say there should be greater protection for some of nature's greatest scavengers and predators. Scientists insist that factors such as climate change, which is affecting shark numbers, couldn't explain the scale of the decline. Australian states have tried different ways to reduce the risk of shark attacks. Authorities in New South Wales favour a high-tech approach to deter and detect predators, including drones that use artificial intelligence to spot sharks near surfers. In January 2014, the Western Australian government responded to a series of attacks with a controversial catch-and-kill policy. Almost 70 sharks were caught and shot before the strategy was abandoned after a recommendation by environmental officials. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello friends, this is Sunday Shomari host, Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic will be superstition. This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Nigeria is preparing for general elections in February 2019. President Muhammadu Buhari is running on an ambitious anti-corruption agenda. But opposition leader Atiku Abubakar believes the president has neglected the economy. An in-depth discussion on Nigeria's future.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America, VOA.